This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Healthy Aging, providing you with the unique energy support of Pure NT Factor. NT Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age, illness, or just being run down. NT Factor from Nutritional Therapeutics repairs damaged cells and restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT Factor for years with a 45-day money-back guarantee of nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158. That's 800-982-9158. Or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And it's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions. And we love to hear from listeners about any medical quandary they have, questions about vitamin supplements, nutrients, or high-tech medicine. And it's all within the purview of... What we call intelligent medicine. Mm-hmm. With me today is Layla Mudin. She's our nutritionist in residence. How are you doing, Layla?
I'm okay. How are you?
How's the house building progressing?
It's good, but it's a very hot time of year to be doing a roof.
Right. Mm. That's like one of the worst jobs is roofing in
July.
In July and August. Because it's, you know, they talk about tar beach.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, on the it amplifies the heat right up
yeah.
there on the roof.
Yeah.
So I think there's a song about that. Up on the roof, up on the roof. So you were going to try to dissuade your very very determined husband.
Yeah.
From developing heat stroke.
Right, because there's supposed to be a heat wave in the coming days, and
okay.
I don't want him to go up there.
Okay. Well, good luck to you, because I know Paul, and he's a one determined individual.
That's true.
So, and men being men, you know, they will sometimes ignore prudent advice.
Right.
Okay. And he's in a hurry to get the house done. So let's, you know, before we get to questions, radioprogram at AOL.com is the destination for questions. I think one of the most important articles of the year appeared in JAMA. Journal of the American Medical Association, this week. And it's entitled, it's a tantalizing title, Association of Lifestyle and Genetic Risk with Incidence of Dementia. And the question that they're asking in this study is, when my screen reappears here, because you touched the wrong button and your screen disappears. The question that they're asking is a healthy lifestyle associated with a lower risk of dementia, regardless of genetic risk?
Yes.
Now,
short answer.
Short answer, yes. Well, you know, interestingly, this parallels a study that was done a little earlier this year, or perhaps at the end of last year, which was exactly the same study, except with respect to cardiovascular disease. They identified about 70 genes. And you might have heard Jeff Bland lecture on this subject because he picked up on this. They identified 70 genes that were associated with cardiovascular risk. And some of these genes were associated with blood clotting, some were associated with inflammation, some were associated with blood pressure, some were associated with insulin resistance, you know, all cholesterol, all the different factors that go into cardiovascular disease. Not just cholesterol, because cholesterol is not the end all and be all, but the genes that are associated with that.
Yeah.
So some people had pretty bad genetic scores. So the people with the worst genetic scores who are on the best lifestyles, and actually it was kind of simple with lifestyle. It was like, you know, eat a kind of a Mediterranean diet, don't smoke, exercise a little, not even that much.
Aerobic especially.
And you know, that was about it. You know, I think it was, you know, just pretty simple. It wasn't like take... you know, CoQ10 or resveratrol or you know,
acetyl-L-carnitine.
Yeah, all these like good
DHA.
Things that we might give, you know, chiolic aged garlic extract. You know, it wasn't too fancy. It was just you know, do the basics.
Yeah.
And they found that the people with the worst genetic scores who had the best lifestyle scores were equivalent to the average people. It sort of averaged out. In other words, you could virtually overcome the adverse genetics with exceptionally good lifestyle. If you had good genetics and good lifestyle, you were like bulletproof.
Fabulous.
If you had crappy genetics and crappy lifestyle, very high incidence of cardiovascular disease.
Yeah.
So they did the same thing, obviously with different genes, looking at 196,000 participants of European ancestry, 60 years old or more.
Mm-hmm.
And they looked at a genetic hazard ratio that was roughly three times higher compared with the participants with lower genetic risk. And what they found, and they looked in particularly at ApoE.
Yes.
ApoE4. ApoE4 is high risk. And some people think it's the crack of doom to have ApoE4. And by the way, we know a person who has ApoE4.
Yeah.
David Perlmutter.
Yes.
Who's written The Grain Brain.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote the book, I think, possibly because he felt, you know, the onslaught of the years. He's a neurologist. He studies the brain.
Yeah.
And he knows that he has that risk.
Right.
And he is a apostle of the view that lifestyle can trump genetic risk.
Yeah.
And
it's so encouraging.
He was sort of talking out of his hat, you know, and it's like, oh, that's very encouraging, but like, nah, maybe all the stuff that you're talking about, all these healthy things, will come to naught in the face of a very profound genetic risk.
Yeah.
And what they found is a favorable lifestyle was associated with a lower risk of dementia. There was no significant interaction between genetic risk and healthy lifestyle. In other words, what they're saying is just because you had a genetic risk didn't mean you weren't going to follow a healthy lifestyle. You can follow a healthy lifestyle even if you have a high genetic risk.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of detail within this study. I mean, I have to read every page of it. The materials and methods, and, you know, maybe I'll write a little article about it.
It's encouraging that your genes are not your destiny, and that we have the ability to turn genes on and off. With the right lifestyle, the right diet, your chance of dementia becomes far, far less. And the wonderful thing about it is, yeah, people have trouble changing their lifestyle or their eating habits, but it's well within your control.
The fourth thing was
what?
Drinking alcohol in moderation.
Ah, now let's define moderation.
If you're in Germany, it's like three beers a day.
Right. If you're in Italy, it's about a bottle of wine a day.
Right. But
if you're in America, you are a heavy drinker if you have more than 2.5 drinks a day.
Okay.
2.5.
So it's cultural. It's cultural.
Right.
But anyway, the point being though that a little alcohol seems to be somewhat protective, but I really don't think that
it's a neurotoxin.
I don't think that it's recommended that if you don't drink that you should drink to preserve your brain.
No.
it's mostly on the upside, because it increases the risk of stroke and, you know, vascular disease, and basically is a neurotoxin.
Yeah.
So
it depletes your thiamine. You need that.
In this study, they did what's called a polygenic risk score.
Oh.
So, which is kind of what we're doing now. We're starting to do genetic testing. Single nucleotide polymorphisms were selected. There's actually a full list of them in the supplement to this study, which have been demonstrated to drive risk for cardiovascular and
dementia.
Cerebrovascular disease, as well as dementia.
Mm.
So the healthy lifestyle score wasn't a biggie. Four well-established dementia risk factors: smoking status, physical activity, diet, and alcohol consumption.
Mm-hmm.
So 150 minutes of moderate activity per week or 75 minutes of vigorous activity per week, pretty easy, right?
Yeah.
Healthy diet, consumption of at least 4 of 7 commonly eaten food groups following recommendation. It's probably what you would consider kind of a wussy recommendation.
Mm.
Alcohol, 0 to 14 grams per day for women. Well, that's pretty low. 0 to 28 grams per day for men.
Mm.
So there you have it. That's
yeah.
What really worked.
That's interesting. And the most, the best point about it is that this is all within our control. So it's not a matter of, oh, this is in my genes, I'm going to get diabetes because it's in my genes, it's in my family history. But your family also ate the wrong way to get diabetes, for example.
So this poses a question, like, why even do genetic testing? Mm. Because if you're going to, you know, whatever you eat in a healthy lifestyle, I think it's actually a teachable moment. Because when you do an analysis that shows that somebody has some faulty genes, predisposing genes is a better word, more neutral word, that you show them that, and that's what we're doing when we do genetic testing, and we show them, you know, you have some risk, but those risks can be mitigated. So it's not like a hopeless thing.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. It's a good report card, too, to take a look at all that.
It's a report card of one, because it doesn't change.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's.
Yeah.
Because it.
But then you could have a thorough plan given to help tackle those particular genetic traits or lack thereof to take the best care of yourself. That's a wonderful thing. Internal locus of control.
Right.
So this is very important.
So let's talk a little bit about cholesterol in the brain before we get to questions. Of note, and I shared this with my listeners, was a study recently that showed that feeding cholesterol to experimental animals, in this case mice, mm-hmm. with a mouse model of MS.
Yeah. Multiple sclerosis, yeah.
Right. Reduced the progression of MS, improved their reasoning skills, you know, like probably maze performance.
Wow.
And was shown to help preserve the oligodendrocytes, which are the sort of little tendrils that reach from one nerve to the other to connect mm-hmm. the nerves, and also slowed the progression of the myelin destruction that occurs in MS, because cholesterol is essential for the brain.
Yes.
Now, of interest, though, is that I have, we together have mm-hmm. quite a few patients who have MS, and we saw one today who's worried about her cholesterol. Her cholesterol is 270, and
yes.
so, you know, the question was, should we lower the cholesterol? Because, fine, we're going to treat the MS, but is she going to die of a heart attack? What the study speculated was that there is some evidence that people with MS have higher cholesterols, and that that may be a compensatory action by the body.
Yes.
Because people tend to think that we're just...
save itself.
Yeah, that the diet is the source of all the cholesterol. So if you don't eat cholesterol, you're going to have zero cholesterol.
No.
Of course, that's not the case.
No.
You manufacture about 90% or 95% of the cholesterol.
Yes, the liver makes it. Yep.
Yeah. And it's maybe a response. It's like spackle for your brain, you know, when you have some kind of...
not just the coronary arteries, but yes, for the brain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is an interesting study where it actually shows that taking cholesterol... So of note, though, is... and I looked this up for some of our patients... mm-hmm. Do statin drugs slow the progression of MS, or do they make them worse? Because if you lower cholesterol, I mean, it would be a disaster to lower cholesterol for these people. Actually, it turns out that statins are somewhat beneficial for MS, even though they lower cholesterol. And the reason is, and I looked it up, they say it has nothing to do with cholesterol. It is an anti-inflammatory drug.
Ah,
it's sort of like a
that itself
super
is...
like a super aspirin for the brain.
Right.
And it may slow the progression of MS for that reason. So
very interesting.
So we have now Terry Walls, who is the a real
N of one.
Yeah, N of one for mm-hmm. healing herself of MS. And she did so by going on a paleo diet heavy in meat and heavy in saturated fat and cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a big fan of organ meat.
Yes.
And one thing about organ meat's higher in cholesterol.
Yes.
Liver is very high in cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
Brain is very high in cholesterol. Kidneys are high in cholesterol. So it may be that she's engaging in an experiment of cholesterol feeding for her cohort of followers who, I mean, basically what she's doing is not too much different from what we've been advocating for a long time. Paleo diet.
That's true.
She emphasizes nose to tail. There may be some slight difference in the supplements she recommends from the supplements we recommend for MS.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting what that study showed.
Cholesterol is necessary for life. Our brains, 40-60% of our brains are cholesterol. It's part of the phospholipid cell membrane. All the cells in our body have cholesterol in it. It is necessary. And consistent with cholesterol being beneficial, when the Framingham Heart Study looked at those people with a total cholesterol of less than 200, they found that they had less mental acuity, recall ability, they had more aggression, more depression,
suicide,
more suicide, aggressive behavior, I said aggression, and all of that with a total cholesterol of less than 200. And what is it that, what number is it that cardiologists like to see? Oh, 127? Wow.
Well, they want LDL under 70 for people with cardiovascular disease.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, it's a great experiment that we're embarking on. It's not clear where it's going to lead us to.
Yeah. So this is actually fascinating, and hopefully it will vindicate that cholesterol is not a foe. That it's not a foe. Triglycerides, on the other hand.
Triglycerides are more a reflection of insulin resistance.
Yes, yes. And that can lead to cardiovascular disease. It's the fat under the skin. It's the fat in the between the organs, the visceral fat. It's the it's the consistency of your blood circulating. It could be, if you have very high triglycerides, it could be the consistency of a milkshake. Imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen blood like that. When you draw blood, it looks like, you know, borscht with the sour cream.
Yes, with the sour cream in it.
Right, it goes from like bright red to like sort of like pink pastel color.
Yeah.
It's really weird. All right, well, let's get to questions.
Okay. We have a question from Erwin. What are trans fatty acids? When reading ingredients on package labels, how can I tell whether it contains trans fats? Are there specific ingredients or names to watch for besides just trans fatty acids? Wow, this could be a whole podcast right here.
Okay.
So, yes, Erwin, what you want to look for in the ingredient label is look for hydrogenated oil, any kind of oil. It could be soybean oil, cottonseed oil, corn oil, doesn't matter the oil. Hydrogenated oil or partially hydrogenated oil. This is evidence.
Hydrogenation means trans.
Trans. And these are the factory-made trans fats, the man-made trans fats that are very dangerous for your health, for heart, for immunity, all of that. There are, however, naturally occurring trans fats that are present in meat, that are present in dairy, which are beneficial. Transvacinic acid is a precursor.
From dairy, right.
From dairy. Is a precursor to conjugated linoleic acid,
CLA.
Which is a potent anti-carcinogenic agent. It confers benefits that way. So not all trans fats are bad. The naturally occurring are fine, which we find in our food. It's the ones that in the processed food, the factory-made trans fats. You might see that on an ingredient label for sliced bread, certainly for other processed foods, chips, crackers.
It's, and you know, what's disturbing to me is they made an effort to ban it, but it's still found to small amounts in many processed foods.
That's true. The FDA still allows
less than 0.5.
Yes, less than 0.5. If a serving has less than 0.5, they're allowed to say this food is trans fat free. So, which is not great.
If a serving is like two Oreos.
Right.
When was the last time you ate two Oreos?
Well, first of all. At least half a sleeve,
I mean,
right?
I haven't had Oreos like in 30 years, but when I had Oreos, it was like, give me
six.
The box.
Give me a sleeve of Oreos. Right. Pass it here. So who's having just two? You're probably having six.
Yeah.
And if two has just shy of half a gram, you're getting just shy of a gram and a half if you're having that many.
I think it was Walter Willett who is a preeminent nutritionist at Harvard, who estimated that trans fats were responsible for about 50,000 deaths per year in the United States.
Yes.
Just the trans fats alone. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say because, you know, on your tombstone, it's not going to say, you know, the proximate cause of death, died of trans fats. But it's certainly one of the most harmful elements. And many countries are outlawing trans fats or putting severe limits. You know, New York was actually one of the first places that put the kibosh on trans fats along with smoking in bars. So,
right. Well, the smoking in bars and restaurants was a great idea. I mean, banning it was a great idea.
So there you have it on trans fats, but, mm-hmm. you know, we really want to avoid them like the plague.
You do. You do. And just because an ingredient or a packaged food may label trans fat free, don't buy that. Go look at the ingredients first. If you see partially hydrogenated oil or hydrogenated oil, put it back.
Hydrogenated palm oil, for
palm
example.
Oil. It could be any oil.
Yeah.
Palm, it could be canola, it could be safflower,
soy,
sunflower, soybean oil, cottonseed oil, all of them, all of them. If there's hydrogenation involved, it's become a trans fat. So,
and that's what Crisco is, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy, I remember the Crisco on the kitchen counter growing up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then people would just put a ton of that. You know,
I
had a friend who worked in a supermarket, mm-hmm. and he was the baker for a supermarket.
Yeah.
And he said, you want to see, like, behind the scenes, because this is a really big industrial operation. And I looked at these amazing, like, stirring machines and mixing bowls, giant, you know, like, because they would make all this stuff for all the supermarkets. And then there were all these, like, barrels, mm-hmm. barrels, like, literally barrels. And I said, what's in there? And he goes, well, that's the hydrogenated fat for our shortening.
Yes, the
and
shortening.
And that's pure. And one of the advantages of that is if you make a pastry with fresh oils, it goes rancid very quickly. And you go, oh, that does a bit. But hydrogenated oils they have stability, mm-hmm. and they don't go rancid. Because rancidity has to do with single bonds, and trans fats have double bonds, which are more stable. Mm-hmm. And they become less subject to rancidity and oxidation. Mm-hmm. So there were barrels and barrels. I said, well, you know, how much of this, how much of this do you use? Oh, we got like 2-3 barrels a day of this stuff.
Wow.
And it all goes into the pastry. It goes into the people. And it's not like, oh, I didn't have any hydrogenated fat because I didn't buy margarine.
Mm-hmm. It's not just about the margarine.
But it's like a Trojan horse for this bad stuff that gets into you.
Erwin, don't just look for partially hydrogenated or hydrogenated oils or fats, also look for the word shortening.
Okay.
That will still be called shortening.
Okay.
On a food ingredient label. And put it back.
All right.
Put it back.
Well, there you have it, Erwin. Thank you for your
question. That's the way to watch for trans fatty acids.
You really have to highlight that problem. But it's at least, no, labeling will disclose it. It's who bothers to read labels, and you can, you know, squint sideways, and it's very hard sometimes for the consumer to process this information.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's pause because we divide our podcast into two parts.
Wow.
And give us a preview of what we're going to tackle in part two.
Accidental exposure to diatomaceous earth.
Whoa, is that a scientific article?
No.
No, it's a question. Okay.
This is somebody who's in pain from this accidental exposure.
Wow, that is one of the most interesting questions.
Yeah.
That we've come across.
So stay tuned for part two.
All right. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.